you for taking a ride on the Freedom Train Podcast. I'm your host, Joseph Ward. That's always right with me is my good homie, Mr. Patrick Irvin. And remember, the Freedom Train is brought to you by Paxton Inc. That's P-A-C-T-S-I-N-C. And Paxton Inc. is a black development organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with a trace of hard work, honesty, and integrity. For more information about Paxton, you can visit their website at www.pactsinc.org, where you can see the home page where it's filled with information. You see the tabs at the front where you have the code, the about tab, the member donor tab, involve more in the shopping cart. But if you visit each tab, there's a plethora of information provided for you by the organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential. And that's you. Yes, you. Not the person behind you, but you. And once again, the website is www.pactsinc.org. And while you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. That way you can learn more about myself, Patrick, Enigma September, and Miss Shelby Davis. Once again, our website is www.freedomtrainradio.com. Why you coughing, Pat?
Because you don't know now.
Now. That was clever. Man, what it look like on a black hand side, slick?
It look like a can of oil sliding across a bottle of orange juice.
You heard me? Look like it looked like a pair of new skis on snow.
It looked like Botox in a 60-year-old white lady.
Oh yeah, it looked like fresh toenails on the hood chick.
Oh, okay. It looked like a gap tooth on a ratchet chick.
Okay. It looked like bad glue and lace front on the chick next door. Ooh.
Oh, okay. It looked like a black eye on an NFL player's wife.
Right. It looked like Charles Barkley in some football coach shorts.
Okay. It looked like basketball players who don't respect black women.
It looked like Al Sharpton right now.
Oh, you throwing haymakers, huh? Okay.
Hey, that's what friends are for.
I can't believe it. You win.
Hey. hey, man, that's how we are. Ready for Wild or Not. I'm ready
Yo,
for him, man.
It's still around, man.
I'm excited about that too. I'm happy for Nick, man. That's pretty damn cool.
I am too, man. Nick went from being the cornball of the famous black community to being one of the pillars of this shit.
Right, that dude. Nobody knew what he was doing behind the scenes though.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. Like we always surface levels with things, and it's like if a person doesn't have that, like if a black dude don't have like two things, if he ain't like that sex symbol or he ain't that tough guy, then he looked at as a cornball.
True. Very true.
Know what I'm saying? So Nick didn't fall in either one of those categories, even though Nick was getting chicks. Nick wasn't desired back then like a Morris Chestnut or something, because nobody think Morris Chestnut is a thug, but he don't get disrespected either. You know what I'm saying?
Morris was that dude. Like, I get what you're saying. Because, like, Nick is getting, and we don't know Nick, so Nick could be, like, the coolest motherfucker around.
Right, but we didn't see him like that.
But the way you saw him was, like, okay, so he ain't, like, that dude, and he ain't that dude. So
and then,
like, yeah.
Well, then remember, like, a lot of times we build our perceptions of these people by the characters that they play in movies,
too.
That's
true, and Nick was always playing the cornball.
Right, right. But also, so let's look at Russell Wilson, though. Because Russell Wilson is still, not as much, but Russell Wilson is still looked at as that lame dude, but he got Sierra. But Russell Wilson is, you know, Russell Wilson is that dude as far as, shit, he do everything he's supposed to do. He ball out on the field. He take care of his woman, take care of his family, he take care of his community. He don't do nothing wrong.
Yeah, but so. Russell Wilson is that dude, but he.
Well, not like that dude, like a big boy from Outkast. That dude. Like Russell Wilson is that dude, as in Russell Wilson, a grown ass man who handled his responsibility.
Yeah,
he should be respected for that.
Russell Wilson is lowercase t that dude.
Just yeah. Like I'm saying, like,
t that dude.
Because for me, it's a, if that dude is a scale from zero to Big Boy from Outkast. You know what I'm saying? Because to me, like Big Boy is that dude, like that dude.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with that because Big Boy is
about
that motherfucking dude. But I mean, you know, and all of them dudes. On that level, with that level of celebrity and fame and star power, you know, they ain't gonna never have no problem pulling chicks. You know,
right. But it's the perception of the sex symbol, though. You know, that I was getting at, because of course, like in real life, Nick Cannon was getting chicks back then. He's still getting chicks now. But it's the perception was, you know, like when you sit around when we was in school and. You sit around and you listen to girls talk about the dudes that they desire. Nick Cannon's name may never come up.
Right. Even now, amongst, you know, our peer groups that have aged with us, a lot of women are saying Nick Cannon is cool now and they might give it to him, but he still ain't looked at as, like, that sex symbol type dude, like you said, a Morris Chestnut was, or a Taye Diggs back in the day. Or, you know, Omar Epps back in the day. You know, like, them dudes was, like, that dude. On the screen, you know, like
everybody
wanted to give them somebody. Even, you know, you look at athletes, you go down the line, you know, what's the running back name, ran play for the Saints, got his Heisman taken from him?
Oh, Reggie Bush.
Reggie Bush. Now, that dude was that dude.
Yeah, man. Reggie was getting it from all directions.
Like, I done walked into grown women houses who still have photo, like magazine covers of him in their stash.
Yeah, I mean, you know, though, you know, these dudes, Nick Cannon and like Russell Wilson and stuff like that. It's all perception, though. It's all built off a perception of what a man is and what a black man is, and which basically are false and harmful perceptions, if I may say.
And I would agree with you.
So, you know, yeah.
I think Nick, you know, Nick has definitely done his thing for the community. And, you know, a lot of people, so even with the Wildin' Out thing, I'm real happy about that because, you know, I like Nick and I like the energy he brings. And I want to see him successful. I started really enjoying Nick when I saw his stand-up on Netflix, like, you know, maybe five or so years ago. He had a stand-up. I forget what it was called. I think it was called Mr. Showtime or something. And it was actually funny. It wasn't like, oh, my God, this is the funniest shit ever. But it was a lot funnier than I thought Nick Cannon actually was. Like, a lot funnier. And so from then on, you know, and then Nick has kind of been trying to be on this pro-black conscious shit for a while now. So
I'm not mad at him either, because one thing I like about Nick in that aspect is he's not running around like, you know how I, you know, the beginning stage. Nick's beginning stage is what a lot of people's beginning stage should be. I'm not gonna say everybody, because everybody's different, but a lot of people's beginning stage should be, which is the studying to learn and gain understanding and be able to apply what you understand, because Nick is always talking about what he's reading and, what he's learning, and he's surrounding himself with people who know what the fuck they talking about. And he's not out here preaching at people. He's learning, and he's taking people on his journey as he learns what consciousness and liberation and all these things truly is, rather than somebody who read a couple books, watched Hidden Colors, and then they start a YouTube channel, and they all of a sudden soul brother or soul sister number one. But anywho, so we're just getting our whistle warmed up. Y'all know we got to give our, we got to do that. But today we're talking about spirituality versus religion with Black America, like within Black America, surrounding Black America, and somewhat within the diaspora. We're from the Bible Belt South. Pat and I, we're from Tallahassee, Florida, which is North Florida, which is right in the middle of the Bible Belt. Mm-hmm. So we grew up in, well, I know I grew up Southern Baptist. What type of Christian structure you grew up?
It was mostly non-denomination.
Okay. So we were Southern Baptist. He was non-denominational, but it was Christianity, Jesus, all these things here. So we know that Christianity, Judaism, and Islam are the three main, I guess you could say, big religions that dominate this Western society and the areas that we exist in. More so Christianity, a lot more Christians and Muslims than Jews. So Jews are just starting to come around that we know as far as for Black people, Black Jews, with the Hebrew Israelite movement lately. Start to see more in Tallahassee. Are you seeing them in Charlotte?
Not really, but I'm hearing about them. I'm just not seeing them physically, but I am hearing a lot of the people that I talk to here are talking about them, so okay. I imagine that they popping up in place.
So, I've heard a lot in my life, too many times people have stated, I thank God that slavery happened, because if it wasn't for slavery, either we wouldn't know Jesus or we would still be in Africa worshiping trees or some sort of things like that, which when I was younger, I thought was fully ignorant, even though I didn't have the information to retort that. Now I have the information, so that's one of the reasons why I want to talk about it, because we want to kind of set the table straight as far as giving information, but also that leads into people's misconception about especially African spirituality. People really believing that African people had no religion or no concept of spirituality, when in all actuality, every aspect of religion or spirituality that exists around the globe had its genesis in African religions or spiritual systems. That's fact. That's documented research, factual information. Mm-hmm. Right? So that leads us to this conversation of spirituality versus religion. So we're going to break down what spirituality is. We're going to break down what religion is. We're going to look at the pros and cons of both. We're going to look at why religion dominates our Western society. And we're going to finish it up with why especially African people should not be afraid of African spiritual systems. So, as I was leaving work today, somehow we got into a conversation about getting out, palm reading, fortune tellers, getting your spiritual readings and things. Somehow we got into that conversation. So I was telling people that very soon I'm going to get my spiritual reading, and I know where I can get it from, who I trust to do it. Because that was one of my biggest things why I haven't gotten one is I didn't know where to start, but I got my who, what, where, when, why, and how. So, and one of the young ladies was like, well, isn't that of the devil? And I was like, well, no, if somebody getting their fortune read, or fortune told or getting spiritual reading. I mean, if you think about it from, she come from a Christian sense. So if you think about it from a Christian sense, that's like somebody prophesizing to you.
Yeah.
It's the same. It's literally the same thing. Your perspective of it is the only thing that's different, but it's literally the same thing. And then her reply was, well, that's kind of like of the devil, right? And 20-year-old me would I'd probably still be mad at that. But 35-year-old me understand where she's coming from, so it's not something that would, like, set me off to either have a, you know, ask questions, break into argument, or go home just really harping on that. Like, damn, why she say that shit? But it's like growing up with one program, when somebody introduces something else to you and you have no concept of it, you're going to look at it the best way you know how, especially if the program you have has been designed to reject all other programs. Right. So, I mean, but that's what it is, though.
Nah, yeah, true.
That's what it is. So, with that being said, well, before we do that, is there anything you want to add?
Nah, man, you're on a roll.
Okay. So, religion. You've studied, you're going to be the expert on religion. I'll be more so the expert on spirituality, even though I would not say that I'm an expert on it, but just for this show, for us two, the roles that we're playing, he's going to be the religious tour guide, and I'll be the African spirituality tour guide. So, Pat, what is religion?
I define religion as a set of beliefs about the way something works or the way something is, or, you know, and really, I could expand religion or being religious to any number of things. But for the sake of this show, we'll say it's a set of beliefs or a system of beliefs and dogmas and assertions about how things work and why they work that way.
Okay. And so, from your knowledge, how did religion come about? Like, what were some of the earliest religions, and how did they kind of lead to where we are today as far as engaging in our understanding of religions?
Well, I think all religions, I'll say religion is natural, in my opinion. It's a very natural outgrowth of, I don't want to say ignorance, because I feel like that would piss people off. But I want to say ignorance, because I feel like that's what it comes from.
I get where you're going. I guess if you put perspective, because it is ignorance, because it's like, you're driven by the question. You're driven by your questions, and your questions come from your ignorance. So it's not like you ignorant, like you dumb as fuck ignorant. No, but it's ignorant is I don't know, but not only just existing in ignorance, but moving past ignorance and going to understand what the fuck all is going on.
Right, and so when I say ignorance, thank you for that, because I don't mean it with a negative connotation. I mean it from the purely neutral standpoint of you just don't know. And so when you're faced with a world that you just don't know what's happening or what's going on, you begin to develop a certain set of beliefs that define the world for you. And because of ego and a whole bunch of psychology stuff that we're not really going to get into right now, you become, in a way, enslaved to those beliefs. Those beliefs become your safety net. They become your safety rope. They become your armor so that you can walk out into this world full of the unknown and be comfortable. That's what religion is. So, you know, you look at the earliest forms of religions, the African religion systems, the Eastern European, or the, I'm not the Eastern European, the Eastern religious systems in China and India and various other places. You look at all of those systems, and they all seek to try to define the world and what we see in it, and what's happening around us and in space. And so for me, religion is that particular set of beliefs that one person might have that defines the world and everything going on in it. And that belief could be different from person to person, and we know that it's different from group to group. So that's religion. I think it started out of ignorance, people just wanting to define the world. It's terrifying stepping outside of bed and not knowing if the floor is going to be there or not. You know, it's terrifying walking out of your house and not knowing what's going to happen. So ego insulates us from that. Religion insulates us from that. There are a bunch of different things that protect us from being afraid of all of the things that we don't know and the uncertainty that's out there. And religion does that. So I feel like the earliest religions did that. Religion is a natural outgrowth of ignorance. The earliest religions did that. And you just move forward. And I don't think there has been a whole lot of growth and development in terms of the way religions have moved over the thousands of years that religions have been in place. I think they've had different beliefs, different structures. But on the whole, if we're just talking about religion as a whole, I don't think there's been a whole lot of movement in the utility or the purpose of religion coming into this where we are now.
Okay. Do the current forms of religions, and we'll focus mainly on the Judeo-Christian canon, do these current forms of religion, the way they are practiced now and the way they're understood and perceived, do they line up with that definition that you have for religion?
They do, but it's hard for me to answer that question from a historical perspective, because everything nowadays is heavily political and heavily influenced by culture. And not to say it wasn't back then as well, because we know that if you get a group of people in a room together, politics are going to start happening and culture is going to start developing. But because, you know, that those things operate so differently within groups, it's hard for me to compare historically. But I will say, based on my definition that I just gave, all of those things are still components we see of religion nowadays. You think about Christianity, they seek to explain the world and what's happening in it. And they seek to make people certain about the uncertain. You know, they seek to make people comfortable with things that they don't know. You know, and a lot of the Christian dogmas, specifically growing up in a Christian house and for a time studying to be a pastor, a lot of what we dealt with was dealing with the uncertainty of randomness. You know, well, this happened, and it wasn't necessarily good. How do I process it? Well, you got, you know, phrases like all things work for the good of Christ, or, you know, you know, it ain't for you to know, it's for God to know. On God's time, not yours. When these things move, these things happen. You know, you it's your job to trust and believe. It's God's job to move. All of those phrases come about from the standpoint of something just happened, and
right.
I don't know, you know what I'm saying? There's uncertainty about why it happened and what I should do about it. Well, in the Christian sense, you shouldn't do anything about it. That's God moving. Just trust the plan. So, yeah.
Right. Well, because, see, I'm listening to how you define religion, and then I'm thinking about how the religions operate, and it's more complex. It has more complexities. And of course, because of time and all these things, you're giving an overview of it. You're not breaking it down to its complete core. So taking that into account. But, you know, because the way you explained it, you can see how dogma can exist. But also,
dogma is a part of, a heavy part of modern religion. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. But I can see how a how something like dogma can exist coming from that example that you're giving. But also, but now looking at modern religion, and when I say modern, I'm talking about from the Crusades on up, because historically looking at things that actually happened with the way religion is used. And I think that's one of the key things that people have to look at when they are talking, when they are expressing their disdain for religion, is getting people to understand that religion, you can't talk about religion like it's a person. You have to look at religion as a tool. Now, for real, because we think about it, people literally hate religion as if religion did something. But it's how people, religion is a tool, and it's how people use it. And so, that's why I'm saying it like this, because your definition, I get it, even though people will have different ones, and some people going to agree, some people disagree, but I can understand the utility in it, or the usefulness, rather, in the definition, because looking at religion at really what it is and not how it's been used. But then when you factor in how it's been used, you have to factor in human behavior.
Right.
When it comes to religion.
Right. And that was one of the things that I try to do when I define anything, is define it neutrally and take the human element out of it. And the reason I laugh when you said what you said is because it's a true statement, not just for religion, but for all systems and structures of governance. You know, capitalism. People hate capitalism like it's a person.
Right.
It's a system. You know, democracy. There are a lot of people that hate democracy. There are a lot of people that hate oligarchies. There are a lot of people that hate all of these systems, dictatorships, fascism, all of these things. And it's like, well, all of those things are inherently neutral if you take the people element out of them. When you add the person element to them, well, now we're talking about what type of people are they? Because that goes into color in the system. So that's why I laughed, because I was like, that's actually a powerful statement that could be made about any system of governance or monitoring beliefs or institutions or anything. That's a great statement.
No, but it's real though, especially like, because I know I would talk about religion that way once I start learning more about African spirituality. And when I was in my in the early stage, in my baby stage, and mad that all this goddamn shit existed, and I was only taught one way. But then, you know, as you grow, get older, you mature, you understand, hell, my parents ain't no shit about none of this and other shit. That's why they taught me what they do. Mm-hmm. But now, factoring in human behavior, looking at the way that religion has been used, especially the way religion has been used to subjugate and help keep black people docile, I think that has to be examined, especially when you got people making statements like, thank God for slavery, because if not for slavery, we wouldn't know Jesus, or we would still be worshiping trees. That's problematic. That line of thinking is problematic when it comes to religion. But once again, remember, that's with human behavior factored in, using it as a tool.
Well, and that there are also some historical inaccuracies with that statement.
They're blatant inaccuracies.
Yeah, as well as some cultural, some cultural debasement going on. Some, you know, like there's a lot of things going on where when I hear statements like that, I hear, yeah, slavery was bad, but them white people saved me from my people.
And it's, well, like, but it's like, and I guess it's like my, and my bad not to cut you off,
no,
but everything they gave you was bad. Everything the slave masters gave the slave was bad. Everything they gave them was to keep the slave a slave. But people's mindset is the one thing that they gave us that was good for us was religion. It's like, no, like you are like you said, historical inaccuracies. You are totally ignorant of the history of Christianity and slavery and black people in America.
Right.
Totally ignorant. Like, there's something called a slave Bible. Look it up.
And let's not even get into the fact that Christianity can be traced back to several African systems of spirituality.
Right. At its roots, man. Nah, it's crazy. Cause I was thinking about that the other yesterday morning. I was on my way to work, trying to think about what I want to talk about, like how we want to take this show, and that's what I was thinking about, like going Coptic Christianity. Like, Christianity literally was created on the east coast of Africa. So what the fuck? So, like, when people saying that, like, what the fuck? Though, like, think about it. Like, the west coast of Africa at the time of the slave trade was heavily Islamic. Bro, like, we got historical documentation. Like, Mansa, what the fuck you think Mansa Musa was? Bro, like, look at the names of the kings and the rulers of these civilizations, these kingdoms in Africa, with these Islamic names. Because Islam was there, along with the African spiritual systems that are the basis of Christianity. What's wrong with people, Pat?
I mean, you know, like you said earlier, even about your own parents, they don't know what they didn't know, so they taught you what they knew, and what they knew was inaccurate. And that's the problem with, you know, like, that's, and I'm not speaking to your parents, I'm speaking to everybody's parents right now. And that, you know, we go back to the discussion of religious dogma, which we have to talk about if we're talking about religion, but that's kind of the root of dogma. You know, you combine that with you go back to the psychological issues of people are not necessarily being mature enough to admit that they're wrong or that they're ignorant, they don't know. So they say, okay, this is what I believe. I've seen it work this way. Not even necessarily understanding that you've seen it work that way because you believe it works that way. So your brain is just producing evidence to support your beliefs. Because of the ego factor that I mentioned earlier. And so, yeah. You know, as a result of that, everything else is bullshit.
And yeah, it's like, yeah.
No, there are other things out there, but, like, you know, that is, in my opinion, the foundation of dogma. Everything else is bullshit. This is real.
I guess the part that gets me with that line of thinking when it comes to Christianity specifically, or even any part of the Judeo-Christian canon, is it's not like we don't know slavery wasn't bad. It's not, because, I mean, it's like, the utter disrespect for our ancestors and the conditions and the shit they went through to say some fuck shit like that, like, utter disrespect. You need your ass whooped for saying something like that. Like, I know this black person was fucking humiliated, like treated worse than a fucking dog, raped, all these things. But hey, at least we know Jesus. It's like, are you fucking kidding me?
Especially when you consider that some of your ancestors knew Jesus before they got taken.
Motherfucker, right. I mean, come on. So, all right. So now, with that being said, let's lead into the spirituality. What is spirituality? So, from what I've learned, African spirituality or African spiritual systems, and you can chime in at any point where you feel the need to chime in on this path. But it's more so. It's even beyond spiritual systems. We just use the term spiritual systems for lack of better terms at the time. But it's a way of life. It's a way of living. It's a way of understanding. It's a way of being. So I'm more familiar with the Ifa than I am with other African spiritual systems. So, and I speak from what, from the point of view of the ephah and what I've learned from that, from my studies of ephah. So, it's a way of life. We have orishas. And orishas are the deities who represent different aspects of nature, who all represent an attribute of the whole, which is God. So a lot of people think that, especially when we talk about the Egyptian mystery systems, because a lot of the African spiritual systems are similar. So with the Egypt, within the Egyptian mystery system, you have different deities, once again, who represent different aspects of nature. From the outside looking in, people think that it's a polytheistic way of existing, but they're actually monotheistic because, yes, these aspects of God are deified because they're aspects of God which are still God. And, of course, there's a source. There's source, but there are also aspects of source. So it's kind of like, if I, like the analogy that's used often is, if I dip an empty cup into the ocean and take ocean water from it, then I take that ocean water and put it in other containers in other places and take it somewhere. No matter where I take it, no matter what I do with it, at its essence, at its core, it's still ocean water. So no matter what form you exist in, at your core, you're still a piece of the divine. You're still a piece of source. You're still a piece of God. God is source. Source is God. So if you think, if you've seen the movie Avatar, they really touched on it real good in Avatar. They touch on it real good in Star Wars, the Force. Source, the Force, all these things. God is in the spirituality, the spiritual systems. God is looked at, is conceived, is perceived as a force. And we can see, feel, hear, smell, experience that force through within ourselves and within nature. So when you hear like the five percenters from like New York and all that, when you hear in the hip-hop and stuff, and when you watched, if you watched the Wu-Tang Saga, but the things that you've seen from the five percenters, and I'm saying that, I say it like that because I'm from a Southern perspective, didn't learn about five percenters till I started listening to rap. But they call, talking about the gods and the herbs, talking about the, they call each other gods because they recognize the God force within everybody. And their thing is, only 5% of people understand that they are God, or that the force of God exists within them. Like David Banner just dropped the whole album, The God Box. You know, getting to that concept, those ideas of the force, source. All you have to do is develop it. So that makes sense.
You just went out for like 5-10 seconds. I don't know if it was recorded or if it was just me, but
like at what point did I go out?
You were talking about the force, and then you went out, and then you came back right as you were saying right. So that makes sense. I was like,
at the end of, so basically, I'm just saying like. And from a spirituality standpoint, within us exists. We have spirit. We have source. We have a soul. We have these links to source. These are our birthright. These are what make us divine. These are what make us be considered the gods and the goddesses, the gods and the earths, things like that. This is our connection. This is what makes us divine, basically. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. But I'm just saying, overall, what I'm saying, does that make sense to you as far as you breaking down what religion is? I'm saying what spirituality is.
Yeah, so. It makes sense. I mean, I get what you're saying. So it makes sense to me, and we've had these discussions before. You know, because I view spirituality is more of a personal thing, and it's more flowing, less structured, you know, less dogmatic, more open, and it's more personal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas religion is more about how we're looking at what happens out there. Spirituality is more about what's happening inside of me or what's
right.
going on with me.
Right.
So, yeah, and I believe you're saying all that. So
it
makes sense to me.
Well, yeah, because like you said, it's all about the inner work. There's a guy, Sadhguru. He's Indian. He's a spiritual teacher, spiritual master, healer, educator. He has a book. I haven't read the book, but I've seen him speak. And the topic was inner engineering, and they're talking about developing yourself spiritually. And so, like you just said, from spirituality, everything is inside out. Religion is outside in. So I always say this. The way we've been taught with religion, because I believe that you can be within a religious system. You can be religious, you could be a Christian, Jew, Muslim, and still develop the God force within you. Because your example is Jesus as the person who developed the God force within him. Jesus is your example. So That's me different from a lot of people when it comes to spirituality versus religion. But that's what spirituality is you developing the God force within you. You doing your inner engineering, you doing your inner work, you doing your like the true yoga path, a true yogi. From what I've been studying, the true yogi, not the trap yoga or the goat yoga, all those different things there, because people do them, they probably make money, cool, but if you're talking about a real aspect of the spiritual aspect, yoga is still supposed to go back to the spiritual aspect. And yoga is a word that can be used to encompass everything that we're talking about from a spiritual system, even if you don't come from that type of spiritual place. Let's say you're not from India, or you're not from a place where the word yoga or the practice of yoga is seen as something viable. You more so meditation and some other things there. But as I'm saying the word yoga, you may look at it as the practice of stretching, but yoga is a spiritual system in itself. It's how you exist. It's inclusive of meditation. It's inclusive of your positive outlook. It's inclusive of your inner engineering, your work that you have to do on a daily basis to develop yourself as a spiritual being. And there are a plethora of books out to get you going on these things. So, like, I would say read The Kabbalion. Read The Emerald Tablet. Anything you can find on Hermes, Trismegistus. The book, The Secret, like, The Power of Positive Thinking. That's one aspect of the whole aspects of spirituality that comes from the seven laws of nature. Google the seven laws of nature. Instead of the seven laws of nature, because the seven laws of nature are also what the Kabbalion and the Emerald Tablet cover. And that's from Hermes Trismegistus, and is the same thing as Thoth, which is the same thing as Tahuti in the African spirituality systems. So we're talking about the wisdom and the knowledge of God. That's because that's what like Tahuti represents, the ibis.
And you know, the interesting part is I think religion and spirituality should coexist. I think, you know, it's if we're talking about levels, you know, oftentimes people are introduced to religion through spirituality. Problem
right.
is the way a lot of the spiritual the religious dogmas and structures are set up now is that people aren't really pushed to become spiritual anymore. Now they're just, you know, they're allowed to stay in this religious box and to be able to say, I'm religious, without ever being pushed to say, I'm spiritual. You know, you go back in the day, it was serious to consider, you know, you start a child off on their religious path, but eventually the questions turn inwards. What's
yeah.
your relationship with God?
Right.
What's your relationship with this force? What is your, how are you applying these religious texts and these religious teachings to your life? And those are all spiritual questions.
Yeah. But in itself, like, I have a book that's called The Yoga of Jesus, right? And then, like, if you read several books, I think the some of the Gnostic texts, I think in the Keeper of the Gods and some of the other books that are banned. I can't think of the word of the, a lot of the banned books out of the Bible, but you know what I'm talking about, like, that collection of books that's banned out of the Bible and a lot of the other books that's associated with Christianity on a more of a mystic level. They talk about between the age of 12 and 30, you know, Jesus go missing in the Bible. So they talk about Jesus traveling east and learning his inner engineering.
Right.
Learning to do his inner work, learning to become saved. Because if you really look at the story of Jesus, Jesus was a mystic. Jesus was a yogi. Jesus perfected his inner engineering through practicing spirituality. But people turn Jesus into a religion. A lot of people forget that. But if you really go back and look at it, the things that he was able to do, the things that he talked about, Jesus and Buddha and Krishna, a lot of these Christ characters that existed throughout history or may or may not have existed or who have been created, whatever. But they all taught the same thing. They all taught the inner engineering work. Nobody taught anything different. The only thing different was the culture.
Right. And that's that people element again. But you're 100% right in my opinion. You know, and even the term Christ, you know, we know that that can be a point placed on anybody. You know, Christ means the anointed one. So, you know, there have been several anointed ones. We just know, you know, Jesus, the Christ, is the most familiar one.
Right.
But they all spoke, like you said, they all spoke to a certain level of spiritual enlightenment. Of,
right.
you know, maturity and development. And it was all spiritual. And, you know, that we go back to the difference between the terms. And, you know, we go back to this issue of all of the master teachers taught about figuring out your role and your
uh-huh.
your response and
uh-huh.
how you interplay with all of this. You know, they all taught that same message. But it was all, everything was centered in first understanding, because spirituality is big. And one of the ways that it was introduced or that it was talked to me when I was going through all of my education was if you're looking at an elephant through a microscope or through through binoculars and you're 6 feet away from the elephant, what you can see in those high-powered binoculars is the religion. When you put the binoculars down and you can see the entire elephant, that's spirituality. And so it's hard for a lot of people to be able to see the entire elephant unless
right.
they're introduced to it piece by piece. And then eventually they connect those dots and they put it all together. We do it in every other subject as well. We do it in history. Nobody tries to sit down with a child and teach them all of the world's history all at once. No, you break that shit up into eras and regions, time periods, sagas, events. You break it down. You know, we do it in math. Nobody just throws the most advanced math in the world. No, you break that shit down. Here, you learn basic addition and subtraction first. Then we move on to multiplication and division. Then we move on to exponents. And so we just go through the gamut, going deeper and deeper. Religion is the one focus of human development, education, and indoctrination where that pattern has been paused.
Yeah. Well, religion also is where power and control comes in, because it's somebody using this to gain power and control. Because think about how, like, how Christianity really caught on when some of those European kings saw how many people were Christians. Because remember, Christians used to get persecuted. Mm-hmm. Christians were looked down upon by the kings and, I guess, their so-called pagan ways or whatever they did in the times. And Christianity was looked down upon until they saw that they could capitalize off the number of people who believe in the Christianity. And so they themselves became Christian for political gains. And that still reigns true today. Like, Christianity still exists today with that aspect of it, and it's being a too much of a dominant aspect of Christianity. That's how it could be used in the transatlantic slave trade to subjugate people. But at the same time, Islam was used in the Arabic slave trade to help subjugate Africans, and Judaism was used in the Jewish slave trade to help subjugate African people. So African people have been enslaved and subjugated by people who represent all three aspects of this Judeo-Christian canon.
Yeah, the interesting part even about Christianity as a whole is that, you know, a lot of research and evidence points to the fact that at the earliest stages of it, being labeled a Christian was the same as being called a nigger nowadays.
Yeah.
Like, it was a slur. You know, it was not to be said lightly. And now, you know, we have people walking around proudly proclaiming that they're, well, then I guess that makes it a lot like nigger, because now we have a lot of black folks probably proclaiming
yeah.
they're niggers.
Right.
But in,
right.
in any case, you know, we go back to, with regards to black people and spirituality, we are naturally spiritual people. We, you know, that's been one of the labels that we've carried.
Yeah, we taught the world what it is to what God was and how to be spiritual and or religious.
And the even when they were pillaging the outskirts of the African continent for slaves, it was known that you don't go into the inner parts of the continent. Not only were those they considered to be the most ferocious parts, and it was also harder to get out if you got in there. You lost the backing of the Navy and the sea and all of that other stuff. But it was also known as the land of the spiritual people.
Right.
You know, the land of the blacks, the land of the spirits. Our people have always been very spiritual. And that has, in a lot of ways, helped in our adaptability to all of the various climates that we found ourselves in, because we are, by and large, people that believe that God will work for us. We just have to be patient. So that was a component of our enslavement. But another component was just, you know, the bastardization of our beliefs. The reason why
yeah.
black people flock to Christianity is because it's familiar.
Well,
they're familiar.
Right. Also, like you said, the bastardization of our spiritualities, or I would say the demonization of them, because our spiritualities have been taught to us as if there is devil worshiping. If you go back to what African people did before Europeans forced their religion, or for Arabs forced their religion on them, then you're going back to devil worshiping, the worshiping things that are ungodly, which is not true, which is totally not true. And you know, when we toward like when we wrap this up, we're gonna go more into that. But it's not true that African people were around here doing demonic evil stuff. Like, you know, they made it seem like the witch doctors or the shamans or the priests, that was evil. They're cannibals and they're gonna put you in the pot and boil you and eat you and all those different things. When we can actually look at more evidence of cannibalism in Christian communities in Europe in like the 12 1700s. You see cannibalism more so in Europe and supposed Christian places than we did in Africa with these indigenous spiritual systems. And then looking at it from the Ifa, it's like this is all about being able to connect with the Orishas, the deities, connect with nature, connecting with God, living in harmony with nature. See, that's one of the biggest things about these African spiritual systems is about peace, love, and harmony. But we're getting your ass if need be, hence the Haitian Revolution using voodoo, which has got such a bad rap from the Western societies and people at Haiti and people in New Orleans and everything that surrounds voodoo is like it's just the most worst thing ever. But if you really look at aspects of Christianity, you can see aspects of voodoo within Christianity. If somebody catching the Holy Ghost, it's no different from somebody being possessed in voodoo. Right. What's the difference?
But that's exactly why I say that our religions were bastardized and handed back to us because in a lot of ways, when Plato talked about this in his theory of philosophy of education, where he said, the goal of education wasn't to put knowledge into a soul, but to bring about the latent knowledge already in the soul. And he believed right. that we were born knowing everything that we would ever
right.
know.
Right.
We just needed to be reminded of the fact that we knew it. And I know that there's a lot of thought out there that would disagree with that. But one thing that is a powerful component of what he said when he said that was that if you convince somebody
if
you convince somebody that the information you've just poured into them is something that came from them and they already knew it intrinsically, then they believe you wholeheartedly and they believe that information wholeheartedly. The Christianity models, all of the various models that we were introduced to when we got enslaved, the reason why we took to them so well is because they were familiar to us.
Even the psychologist Carl Jung wrote about this extensively especially when we got into the archetypes. We resonate with certain things because these things are already a part of us, like you were saying. Right. That's why we resonate with these certain things, and we resonate with them on an archetypal level or a higher level, more so than just the level of our five senses. On a higher spiritual level, on a higher vibratory level. Because it's from a spiritual standpoint, everything vibrates. And everything that comes to you or within you is because you've attracted it with your vibration. So whatever you – that go back to the law of attraction. The law of attraction is all about what vibration you are on. Just like what signal you are on. Like if I'm on the radio, if we're looking at it like his radio signals, if I'm on a station that's 96.1 and your station is 102.3, we're not on the same vibratory level. But all of that can be developed, like Pat was talking about Christ consciousness. Christ consciousness goes back 3,000 to 4,000 years before Christ. There, every culture, every society has had some Christ figure that they looked up to. Everyone. Whether they called it the Christ or not. But these figures all had Christ consciousness. But remember, Christ consciousness, even the idea and the concepts of Christ consciousness existed before Jesus Christ. Christ is a title that Jesus earned by developing himself internally, developing the Christ within him. That's the spiritual aspect of it. So not to just get lost on this. All right, so because even within that, so real quick, pros and cons of religion from your opinion, pros and cons of religion, especially when we talk about black people in the Western civilizations or black people around the globe?
I think religion has two major pros. One is that it makes the world safer. Not from the standpoint of actually making the world safer, because we know religion has been at the root of some evil, heinous shit. But in terms of psychologically speaking, it makes the world safer for you mentally. You can get up and get out of bed and feel relatively safe moving about your day around the plethora of things that could kill you at any moment because of some sort of religious belief that you have. And even for those of you that are atheists, don't get caught up in saying that, well, I don't even believe in a God. You still have some sort of belief about the way the world works. And that is what I'm talking about when that's why I used the definition of religion that I used earlier. So in that sense, it makes the world safer for us mentally. We can move in a space. In another sense, it introduces us to a lot of the more complex issues, problems, conundrums, whatever you want to call it, challenges that are present in the world from without and from within. It introduces us to morals and values, and it introduces us to how our own personal or intergroup morals and values interact with other people's morals and values, and it helps us prioritize various different things happening in our lives. Now, the problem with that, the big cons with religion, because those are some of the pros, the big cons are built into some of those pros. When you get heavily dependent on this way of thinking being the right way, you become a bigot. And there are a lot of bigots walking around out here who think that their way is the only way and any other way is intolerable and shouldn't even be put up with. That makes you a bigot. And it makes you somebody that's not open. You're closed off. It stunts your growth. It prevents you from moving to the next level because you're not willing to accept various flaws in your beliefs, and you're not willing to accept that other beliefs are just as valid as yours. So, on the other hand, there is the structure of it. Just the way people tend to be introduced to it is through this structure, this hierarchy. And in a lot of ways, going back to what you said earlier, what Joe said about introducing the human element, when you introduce that human element, you're dealing with power and corruption in a lot of cases because morals and values haven't been instilled in such a way that will protect an institution from corrupt people. So now you're dealing with people who are going to corrupt this process, corrupt this structure for their own benefit. And that's going to lead to several other things. Like with the Catholic Church, you got the priests touching on little boys, touching on little girls, touching on each other. You've had various different holy wars and crusades. Yeah. You've had all of these things happening because of the hierarchy that's set up by the structure. And the power and the control, the wealth, all of those things that are set up by a structure that on its face could be used to enlighten the masses one step at a time, but is instead used to enrich those people at the top and to maintain their power and control over those people at the bottom. So those two are two huge, huge, huge kinds of religion. One of them is just the human component of it. You can't do much about it until you change the humans that are operating in that system, and that's going to be a cultural change. That's a whole other show about how to do that.
Now, believe it or not, I believe that spirituality has some of, if not all of, the same cons that religion has. Because just like, well, for one, people have to realize just because a person practices a spiritual system doesn't mean that that person is a good person. So
that's a good point.
No, but think about it. They show us this shit in the movies all the time, Pat. Forever, you have a Luke Skywalker, you have a Darth Vader, right? You have a Simba, you have a Scar, you have a damn you have a Neo and you have them agents, right? So also if we go back and look at the mythologies, because remember religion is what happened when mythology is taken literally, right? Mm. So we go back to the mythologies, and we're talking about, we go specifically to the mythologies of Asar and Aset, or Isis and Osiris, and we're looking at Heru and Set. Heru represented the higher nature of a person, and Set represented the lower nature. So now we're getting to talk about the chakras, the seven chakras, because the seven chakras are the spectrum of the human being's higher and lower nature. Not the full spectrum, but some of the main energy centers of the spectrum. So going from the root chakra to the navel chakra to the solar plexus to the heart chakra to the throat chakra to the brow chakra to the crown chakra. And so existing more so from the heart chakra on up, our higher nature, rather than from the solar plexus on down, or more so more people exist between or basically at the root chakra or the sex chakra and the sex chakra range, because we're highly sexually driven. We're oversex nation. But if I exist more in my lower nature or my animal instincts, I'm going to be driven more to more on my urges rather than having discipline, right? So those things can happen. You can, once again, you can be religious and be an evil person. So human element exists in religion and spirituality, but spirituality frees you. Spirituality allows you to coexist peacefully with nature. It makes sure things grow, flourish, love, breed, rather than are destroyed. Not saying religion is built on destroying, but these are aspects, or these are the pros of spirituality. Spirituality connects you more with your inner self. Spirituality connects you more with others. You realize and you understand that all is connected. That's what they were trying to teach you in Avatar, that all is connected. So when and those are just some of the quick pros and cons that come to my mind when I'm thinking about spirituality. One of the biggest cons of spirituality is the human element. But the biggest pros is the actual element to be fully connected with Source. All right, so go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, we're isolating out the biggest pro of spirituality, in my opinion. The biggest pro is the ability to structure complex issues in such a way that it could be understood by all people regardless of their level. That's pretty significant.
Yeah, that's skill too. Like you got to, that's what make you that dude or that woman. So yeah. So how did, going back to you, Pat, how did these religions come to dominate Western worlds, from your knowledge?
I think that's another one of those human questions, because I think religion has always been a dominant force in human development. I think the Abrahamic or Abram religions came to dominate because they were at the root developing and largely being accepted at a time when the people that would become the rulers of the Western world were starting to step into their era of prominence. So naturally they brought their structures and their religious beliefs and their mandates from heaven and all that stuff with them. So, you know, I don't think that there's like some special path that was carried out. And of course, some religious scholar could come on here and say, "Nah, Pat, you're wrong," and that's very well possible. But from what I do know, I don't know that there was anything special or significant that made these religions overtake all of the other religions, with the exception of the fact that these religions were taking root and were coming to the forefront at a time period when Europeans were starting to step into prominence. Europeans took the religious guide, the religious lead on a lot of things from the Muslims and the Arabs that were at the time pushing Islam. They took the lead from various Christian systems from when black folk came up into the Caucasus Mountains and went further north and helped them with a lot of their issues and showed them a lot of different ways of enlightenment. And even to the Roman Empire, which is heavily involved in the propagation of Christianity and Catholicism. You know, you look at how the Roman Empire at its root is one of the foundational pieces of the American Empire that will come later, and the British Empire that would even come before the American Empire would. So you just, if you follow the empires and you follow the major beliefs of those empires, you follow a trail that shows these religions becoming prominent because they existed at a time when the people that believed them were becoming prominent people. At the fall of the Ottoman Empire, when it split up into all of the various different Middle Eastern nations, it was a Muslim empire. And all of those nations over there are still Muslim people. So I think that's it. Now, you know, we could, again, there's the power and control aspect which you bring up, which is accurate. So if we're looking at the Christ in Catholicism or in Christianity, we're talking about the Romans utilizing that narrative to gain power and control.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of talk about various different meetings of church people, church officials. I'm not going to get into naming one specific one, even though I know that there's one that's on most people's minds. Fact of the matter is, there were several of those meetings that happened, not just one.
Okay. Well, let's put some perspective to that, because I know what you're getting at. You're talking about Nicaea, right?
Right.
So, if I'm correct, Nicaea was one of 18 councils that helped restructure Catholicism the way we know it, which is the overarching umbrella of the Judeo-Christian canon.
Right.
So, like I'm saying, the Council of Nicaea was one. It was a significant council as far as the restructuring of the Bible and Jesus Christ and all these other things, but it was one of 18 councils that was held within, I think, a year or two time to restructure Catholicism.
Right. And so, you're right to add context. I'm hesitant to get into that because when you name one and don't name the others, you get we've been having.
Thinking
that the Council of Nicaea was the meeting that did everything.
But to be fair, it's like we don't like harp on religion like that. So, and we're only really talk about when I say we don't harp on, I mean me and you. Mm. But us as a whole society, we're only really talk about Council of Nicaea. When people get into Illuminati talks and all these things, people only really bring up Nicaea because that's the information they come across, because that's the most famous council. Like I said, I understand why it's the most famous, because it was one of the most significant, if not the most significant, in the restructuring of Christianity, but it was one of 18 councils.
Right, and you know, to get too deep into the council, but I will say a lot of the things that people attribute to the Council of Nicaea didn't actually happen at the Council of Nicaea, but that's no different from a lot of the other beliefs that people have about how things worked that haven't really done a whole lot of research on how things work.
So what you mean?
To be the way they are.
Like one example of some things people were saying that happened, and I see that didn't happen.
Well, one of the biggest examples that come to mind is the idea that they created Jesus Christ at the Council of Nicaea, and that's
no, it was. Right. It was, well, yeah, because people are saying that he's supposed to be Caesar Borgia. He's supposed to be these other people. We know that the idea or the image of Serapis was used. But, yeah, Jesus Christ was recreated at Nicaea. Jesus wasn't created at Nicaea.
And see, here's the thing. When you actually read what transcripts there are, and a lot of the historical text about the council, really one of the major things the council decided on was they were really trying to figure out whether Jesus Christ was the Son of God or not. It was not
right.
Trying to figure out whether he was real or not. It was just, okay, is this guy just another prophet like he is in Islam, or is he in fact the Son of God? More so than everybody else is the Son of God. Like, this guy is real, like God is really pops. And so that is the significance of the council, is that determination was made there that moving forward, he would be declared the Son of God, and any text that didn't declare him as such would have to be reviewed. But the idea that they created Jesus Christ at the council, well, that's a false narrative. But there are many of those false narratives spread about. I've heard people go so far as to say that Christianity itself was created at the Council of Nicaea. And it's like, wow.
Well, no, right. But that's a lot of misinformation. And because Christianity existed before Nicaea. People of the Council of Nicaea did nothing different than the Europeans did later. And they realized that they can use Christianity to gain power. And that's how Constantine and Charlemagne and all these other kings were able to, you know, gain power and do what they needed to do, which led into the Crusades, is Jesus Christ was recreated. Christianity was restructured because the idea of the Christ already existed 4,000 years before Jesus. Jesus or Yeshua, whoever, there was a figure who existed who is attributed to being Jesus Christ. But now, whether the name Jesus and all that existed, that can be debated. But the idea of this being, the idea of Christhood and all these things here, all existed before Nicaea. Christianity existed before Nicaea. It was just restructured to be used as a means of power and control at Nicaea and after that. And also with the rewriting of the Bibles too, come with King James and all the other people who have these Bibles, that was just as significant as Nicaea.
But this is where we get into all of these stories about dogma and religion and people claiming to be talking about spirituality when they're really talking about dogma and religion, because even to the point of King James, people wanting to claim King James is black and all of these other things here, and you know, like that really has no bearing on anything. Have you really even looked into what King James is and what he was and what he stood for? You know, but even to that, you know, there's this idea where we get caught up, like you said, we can argue about the name of Jesus, and there have been a lot of people saying, well, J didn't exist. Well, you know, that doesn't mean that the sound that J conveys did not exist. J is a derivative
let's just go there, quick tiptoeing around. All right, from my understanding, if we're talking about historical evidence, I haven't found enough historical evidence to prove that a Jesus Christ existed. But there is evidence of enlightened beings who existed around that time who could be attributed to being considered the actual Jesus Christ. Just bam, it's on the table.
Well, I'm not disputing the existence.
No, I know you wouldn't. I just wanted to put that on the table.
Okay, so and I would agree with that. There is evidence that suggested there were enlightened and anointed people out there. Now, what is there evidence to suggest that somebody, a Jesus Christ figure, existed that was raising people from the dead and doing all of the miraculous things that's accredited to Jesus? There is, but it's also been recognized as forgeries and fakes. So in terms of things that's generally credibly believed to be proof of Jesus Christ's existence, you won't find anything outside of the Bible. And the story about a man cannot be considered a credible historical document when there's nothing else to corroborate it. So, but the bigger issue I have is just with people that make these superficial claims and other people buy into them just because they don't want to think about it. And so we go back to this conversation about, well, his name couldn't have been Jesus because there was no J back then.
Yeah.
Well, you're right. There was no J sound. There was no J letter back then, but that does not mean there was no J sound back then. The sound J makes used to be attributed in various different, and we can't speak to one, but in various different dialects spoken in the Middle East at the time, the J sound was created by a unique spelling of the letter I. So the sound had a representative letter. It just wasn't J. And that'd be like somebody going back in the day, and you know how we so you say you got a white boy you know named Phil. P-H-I-L-L. And so say 30 years from now, they come up with a letter that represents that P-H sound. So that instead of writing P-H, we now write whatever that letter is. And then say 200 years go by, and people recognize white boy Phil for doing some famous white boy shit. And then they get in an argument. Well, his name couldn't have been Phil because this letter wasn't created until 200 years after he was born. 100 years after he was born. So his name had to be something else. Look, not only is that argument weak and not well thought out, but it distracts from the issue of what Phil actually did and what we should actually be talking about. And so a lot of quote-unquote spiritual discussions end up derailed and sidebarred by people having religious dogmatic debates about things that don't really matter and about things that are weak discussions to begin with. So that's kind of my frustration with, you know, trying to have these conversations. And I know we didn't want to take it here, but every time we have these conversations, I just get so frustrated because I understand your heart is in the right place and you're trying to enlighten people or wake people up or get people to think about things differently. We'll say that. But we both know how people are. They're going to get bogged down in the minutiae and the foolishness of things that don't really matter, like his name couldn't have been Jesus because the letter J didn't exist.
Well, but that's in the infant stage. That's in the baby stage. That's if you are matured in your spirituality and stuff and your learning and you're still arguing that, then you haven't been around the right teachers. You haven't been around the right people to help you grow from that. That's stage one stuff. It's stage one stuff. So, but you know, I do get where you at because that's a lot of stuff. But also, it's like the Undercover Brother 2 movie. And one of the interesting aspects about that in the movie is how woke was manufactured. So, and that's relevant to this conversation because in the beginning, or when I first became conscious, being conscious of being woke was associated not with just knowing the history, but being able to learn and practice the spiritual systems and live that, you know, get into the way of life for the African spiritual systems and African ways of life. That was consciousness and woke. But the manufactured woke leads to divisiveness and constant arguments. Right? So it's people not really understanding what enlightenment is, what being conscious is, what all those things. So that has a lot to do with the African spirituality, because me, I'm not a Christian. I can be considered more so conscious spiritual. I haven't really dove head first into the Ifa, but I've been studying Ifa on my own, and I'm going to go further and find some Babalawos and learn a lot more. Right? So I want to get more knowledgeable, more proficient, more into African spirituality, spiritual systems, and Ifa is not the only one I'm a indulge in, but it's the first one. So, I'm also still going to study all different types of religions and things, because I believe all of these things hold a piece of the puzzle or answer that we can use. We just got to stop looking at stuff so in such a divisive way. So,
yeah.
So to kind of bring this home, man. And I start with you and come back to me, and you can throw it back to me. How can black people specifically, not just black Americans, how can black people stop being afraid of African spiritual systems?
I mean, I got an answer, but I'm trying to think of answers that black people would actually utilize.
Okay.
Because the easy answer is to just say that black people should just start be open to researching those things. But having been as deeply entrenched into Christianity as I was, I know that a lot of black people would hear that, and that would be interpreted in their mind as saying that they need to research devil worship and try it out to see if they like it or not. And they're not going to do that.
God damn, people. Okay. No, because I mean, if you're just gonna attribute everything that's not Christian to devil worshiping, then you are ignorant, not ignorant, but you ignorant. You're just as ignorant as the person who thanks God for slavery.
But that's what Christianity teaches.
I do get that. Stupid people in Christianity teach that, and I do get that. But it's like, if you're asking the questions, that's because you want to learn. You want to know more, because there are a lot of people who are not satisfied with what they've been taught, whether it's through Christianity, Judaism, or Islam. But they may not have the gall to go research.
And again, this is from, especially speaking, I can speak with great clarity with Christianity, because like I said, I studied that for a long period of time with the intentions at one point to lead a flock of my own. If you have questions in Christianity, there are two things going on. You're a child and haven't been exposed enough and haven't had enough things shared with you for you to have a thorough understanding, or you're an adult and you're just a bad Christian. Because the modern dogma, and now I'm talking about dogma, I'm not talking
Right. So that's what I want to make clear. You're talking about the ideas that are out there when you're asking those questions.
The current dogma that shows itself through a large chunk of Christianity, and there are some denominations that encourage asking questions and encourage deep research. Jehovah's Witnesses, believe it or not, are one of them. But for most denominations of Christianity, you don't question God, you don't question the pastor, you don't question the message. Well, if you can't question those three things, then you essentially can't question religion.
Right. Not gonna learn.
If you have questions about religion, you are questioning one of the three unquestionables, and you are, by definition, a bad Christian. unless you're a child, in which case it hasn't been beat into you, there's some things you just don't question. But the moment you are no longer a child, and that's different for every church, you are expected not to question those things that are unquestionable. And to question those things makes you a bad Christian. And in order for you to gain a thorough knowledge of what it is you're studying, you have to ask the questions that make you a bad Christian. And becoming a bad Christian, for those that are brought up in that dogma, that religious belief, is one of the worst things that you could ever become. So, I mean, I got people to this day, my wife grew up heavy in the church, I'm not a Christian. I got people to this day that my wife will not tell I'm not a Christian, because it makes her as a Christian look bad. No shot on my wife, but that's the dogma that they've grown up in, that they've been exposed to, and that they are indoctrinated into. So to get people like that to consider something like Ifa, or to consider something like Burun, they would rather you. They would almost. A lot of them would rather die, because they feel like by investigating those things, they are betraying God. They are betraying their faith. They are opening themselves up to something that's unclean, unpure, and they are threatening their own lives, their own souls, with eternal damnation. They're not
going to do that. I get that. I get, because that's why the dogma exists. That's why it was placed in and all those things. But it's like until that has to be challenged. You have to have a paradigm shift in order for you to learn something new.
So how do you do that though?
You can't make somebody do that. Now, I do believe one of the main ways to take the fear out of the African spiritual systems is to learn. You have to learn them. You have to learn them. Now, also saying that with the understanding that everybody's light is going to come on at a different time. Mm-hmm. So in my early days, I would try to say, you dumbass for not learning this shit. That's just me. You know, I'm aggressive. But now, as a more mature person in this, hey, man, your light going to come on when you want to. When you have questions, you know where to come. But the information is here. The resources are here. We have access to more information and resources than we ever did. That's why we have now a lot more people becoming conscious than we did in the past. Because now this is not the first conscious movement that we've had in America, but it's the latest. And it's one, it's a pretty impressive one, especially those who are becoming conscious, truly conscious, as far as the spirituality, being able to take care of themselves and their family, their community, and education-wise, and harmony and peace and all those things, and not trying to become the next, you know, next this and the next that, like the true awakening. And so that's happening, but we're in the South, we're still in the Bible Belt South, so we experience this a lot different than other people, because no matter where we go, we're going to be the minority in the room as far as the spiritual system, because most people are Christian. Mm-hmm. And so some of these people, we can't have this conversation that we're having with, because their level of understanding and their level of tolerance is just not there. There's some people who will listen and still disagree. So I've learned to be able to exist in the Christian societies, not being a Christian, but understanding what goes on around me, what goes into it. And I feel like, and I say this all the time, my understanding, my, I guess you could say, attitude toward Jesus, me liking Jesus increased the more conscious I became, versus when I was young and my parents taking me to church, trying to teach me about Jesus. Like, Jesus is that dude. We talked about being a dude. Like the way Jesus is written out and explaining about where that story is told, he's that dude. He's that example we're supposed to be living. But we don't see the spirituality in him because of the religion, but it's there. And I'm not saying this is something that is going to happen overnight, but the availability of information and resources would definitely help more people not be afraid of the spiritual systems. I mean, yeah, afraid of the spiritual systems, but taking into account, we're still dealing with 400 years of somebody beating Christianity down your throat. So those are my thoughts on that. But I just feel like it needs that these things need to be put into perspective, because you have people on both, like on both ends. The spiritual system will say throw religion away, and the religious way will say throw the spiritual systems away. They both can exist, and they both can exist and bring about peace and harmony and enlightenment. You just have to understand, have a higher understanding of it, and take the dogma out, take the power and control aspect, and really look at it as how does it help me grow spiritually, physically, emotionally, mentally.
Well, you know, that's an interesting component too, because I don't know that it is possible for those spirituality and religion to exist without each other. I mean, I know on the surface somebody can be spiritual and not be religious, but the question becomes, without religion, would you have made it to the realm of spirituality?
Well, and not to cut you off on this, but
No, I was done.
We have the Santeria. Or different forms of Ifa exist within Catholic spaces, because the Santeria was infused into the Catholicism. Even the Ifa was infused within the Catholicism, and religion was used as a vessel to help these African spiritual systems still exist to this day. Because the African people were smart enough to infuse them into the religions so they can survive. So on the surface, it looks like they're praising these saints and these Catholic figures, but really they are, you know, venerating the Orishas, the ancestors and things like that. So they can exist, because we know they have, because that's how we still know about these spiritual systems today, that they was infused into religion. So, I mean, like to say, this is all to get people to think, to look at things differently if you haven't. Like, don't be afraid to pick up these books. Like, read the Tibetan Book of the Dead. Read the I Ching. Read the Bhagavad Gita. Read the Rig Vedas. Read the Bible. Read the Quran. Read everything about mythology, every mythological story you can get your hands on. Read that. Learn about Sufism. Learn about the Kabbalah. Learn about as many things as possible. Learn thermodynamics. Learn all these different things. All these things. Learn Buddhism. Learn Hinduism. All these things are teaching us the same damn thing. Taoism teaching us the same damn thing. Don't be afraid of the different spiritual systems. Now, in every spiritual or religious system, because of the human element, if the human being chooses to use the negative energy within all of these, you're going to get negative outcomes. But as long as the human being chooses to use positive energy and positive wavelengths, you're going to be good. You're going to get positive outcomes. So that's all I got to say about that. What you got? What you want to say? Anything you want to add to that, Pat?
No, man, you just said it all. Shit, I ain't got nothing.
Oh, shit. There it is. Parting shot, Black Power.
All day.
There it is. Hey, mine is escape the fear. Escape the fear, because you'll be surprised about what you learn. Amen. Two fingers in the air like a player. We up out of here. Remember, www.freedomtrainradio.com, at Freedom Train Network, Instagram, at Freedom Train Net, Twitter, Freedom Train Network on Freedom Train Network on Facebook. And, yeah, man, we out here, man. Peace.